At this time, it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, David B. from Newport. Come on up, buddy. Let's do this. Dana Point. My mistake. Sorry about that. There's a water for you.
My name is David. I'm an alcoholic. I'm like, where am I from? And as an idiot alcoholic, I love to correct the world around me. So I'm like, no, I'm from Dana Point, bro. I want to say thank you to everybody that's came here. I understand there's another function going on, and looks like a full room to me, and I'm honored, right? I'm honored to speak to you guys. I have a sobriety date of August 30th, 1997. And for that, I am internally grateful. I don't know why I got to have that, because I know a lot of good men that died of this disease. And recently, it's the thing that happens. You stay sober, you start to care about those around you, and they don't always make it. And it's difficult. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir. I want to thank my lovely wife for coming down with me. I want to thank my friend Dave F. for... we have this banter, right, that we do, and keeps me lively, right? And I want to thank everybody for all the hostesses and our leader and Tom for getting me down here, and you guys are just really, really welcoming. Yeah. I don't know if anybody noticed, but while the secretary was up here, I was having a little bathroom break, right? Last Saturday, I was at the Canyon Club meeting. I was the speaker at the Canyon Club meeting, and we were having a good time, right? It was like it was going well until about 15 minutes left in my pitch, and I felt this sensation, right? And I'm dancing right up at the podium, and I'm like, finally, I was just like, I can't do this. I can't. I'm sorry. Give me 90 seconds. And I walked off the podium, which is raised, right, down through the middle of the dark room with like 200 people in this room to the restrooms. And I came back, and they were still sitting there in the same position exactly, but their mouths were open like. The newcomers were like, did he leave? Is he coming back? Right? Is AA work anymore? I just don't, right? Nobody had ever seen this. I've never seen this. I'm sober a while, and I was actually in AA not successfully for years before I got sober, so I have never heard of that, right? So I'm like, I don't want to repeat myself, right? I'd had 6 cups of coffee, right, before I got up on the podium. I only had 3, so we probably got a 50-50 chance that won't happen again here tonight, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, my God. Yeah, well, here you are. You know what I mean? Another flawed member of humanity up here talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. That is, you know, but it's like, then that's who we are. It's who we are. We don't come in here and become saints. I think the book talks about it. We are not saints. We are not. And for me, it's bled over into the physical. So if you're new, welcome. And I hope to God you find half of the wonder that I found in this place. Now, there's a line in the big book that we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence that we didn't even know existed. I like to use my alcohol with strong sedatives and accelerants, right? So that got my attention. I'm like, I like to be rocketed, man. I like to be moved out of self, right? Out of me. And I'm here to tell you, Alcoholics Anonymous will do exactly that for you. It takes a while. It takes work. It takes some sacrifice. It takes, basically, for me, looking the man in the mirror and saying, you know what? It's time to get to work. It's time to grow up, son, right? Because I was a boy. Until I was 37 years old, I was a boy walking around in a man's body. You know what I mean? And I was throwing fits right and left, right? Just didn't know that I needed to grow up. Man, I got a long time to talk. This is awesome, man. You guys feel like taking a nap in the back? It's cool with me. I don't mind, right? There might be some comfy chairs outside. I don't know, man. It's I know one thing. I'm going to have a good time. Right? It's up to you whether you want to come with me or not. You might not gel, right? It's not my business. But if you don't gel with me, you don't hear anything that I have to share, go find somebody that does, because they're out there, right? And when you hear your story, you're beginning the healing process of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the one drunk talking to another. You know, the heart and soul of it all. And the first time I heard that, it was a man named Cliff R., right? It was and I didn't know what the heck he was talking about. I had no idea, because it was beyond my experience, you know, the life he was talking about that AA had given him. But I knew it was better than what I had. I knew desperately it was better than what I had. And I was like, I don't care what it is. I don't know what it is, but I want it. I want it. And I've been here ever since then. That man saved my life. Him and many others like him, like you, like all of you, like Dave. This is one of my sponsors here of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had 10 sponsors in this 23-plus years of sobriety. Still sober. You know, I love the stories about I got him as a sponsor, and 58 years later, now he's still sponsoring me. How are you guys even alive? But that's not my story, right? It's like... He was not my sponsor anymore because he paroled and left me there, right? Totally thoughtless, right? Completely. So I'm going to tell you that I don't know how I have the story that I have. I really don't. You know, I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, you know, especially when I dress up, right? I'm like, wow. And then I remember it's like, point, counterpoint, but you did the X, Y, you did all those things, and look at you now, right? Look at you. AA has remade me as a human being. It really has. I don't bear much resemblance. There's still, you know, like aftershocks, might call them, right? It's like, okay, that was, you know, I was going off at, you know, Richter scale was like number 10. You know, I was completely devastating myself and the world around me. So there's bound to be aftershocks. I'm not a well person standing before you. You know, if I somehow give you the idea that I'm, hey, I got it now, I'm good, bro. You know, I don't need, it's all good. No, I suffer the same as any man, woman in here. You know, I go through head trips that I put upon myself, same as anybody else in here. Right? I have ongoing. I live with unresolved problems, usually ones that I've created or a perspective of mine that I'm not willing to let go of just yet. So anyway, my story, which I can't believe I have, is started out in Laguna Beach. Right, I'm not from a ghetto anywhere. I grew up in Laguna Beach. Right, my dad's a professor. He's a mathematical anthropologist. Let me get a little reflected glory from my dad right now. Right, and I don't even know what that is. Right, sounds real good though. And my mom is a God, I don't even know what to call her. She's like a Renaissance woman. Right, she just fiddles with things and just excels at it and then goes on to the next. She's been a technical medical writer. She's been an editor for, you know, it was like serious magazines. She's been, she was a potish, like she was an artist. She did pottery for 7 years in the Sawdust Festival in Laguna. She was a teacher, right, and at an experimental school out of UCI. And she's done all these things. She's now kind of like into, she's just getting out of it now. She's 82, right? She's like, okay, I'm tired of that now. But she was in politics and local politics in Laguna. And she's the smartest one in the family. She puts my dad to shame, right? And then there's my sister, who's she speaks five languages. She's an opera singer. She sang at La Scala in Milan, Italy. She won the West Coast Regionals for the New York Met and then caught a cold on the plane over to, you know, for the final competition. Just, she's got, poor sister, she's got luck like me, right? But that's my family. And the whole rest of it, you just go, you know, I got an uncle, I got an aunt that ran Camarillo State Hospital right before it closed, and I had an uncle's an advanced aeronautical engineer for McDonnell Douglas. The whole family's like that, right? All of them. Except for one. Standing before you now, right? But you know what? Not really. Because I found my own way to excel in this world, and I excelled at it. I really did. I gave it my absolute best shot, you know, because I am going to drink, and I'm going to use strong sedatives to the best of my ability, and I did it for 24 years. I'm really excited about my birthday next month. It'll be 24 years. If I keep doing what I've been doing, I will have 24 years next month, and that's how long I drank. You know, I drank from 13 to 37, and I'll have 20. So I'm going to do this because I heard this judge from Santa Barbara do this. I was really interested to hearing him. I knew it was his birthday, right? He was good. I'm like, this guy is erudite, right? I mean, he knows stuff. This is going to be fabulous. It was his 30th birthday, right? So he gets up at the podium, right? He's in a wheelchair. He wheels himself up the podium, and he says, I drank a long time. Been sober a long time. Sober's better. Thank you very much. And he goes and sits down, right? Yeah. Absolutely. So I'm going to say the same thing. 24 years, right? One time I spoke. I'm going to embarrass my wife right now. One time I spoke for my birthday, and I said, I'm David, and I'm an alcoholic, and I've been sober. Alcoholics Anonymous works. Look who I'm married to, right? And the whole room goes, oh, they do all that stuff, right? And I was, but I still feel that way. So there you go. I have a, yeah, there we go. Sorry. So growing up in Laguna was a little different, right? There's not any bad elements for you to go hang out with. You have to become one on your own, right? You know, it's a self-starting program there for going downhill in a hurry. For going to hell in a handbasket, you got to do it all on your own. And I didn't know, you know, really what my path was. And looking back, you know, a quick aside, if I'm lucky, it's a quick aside. I've never known what I'm here for. What I was looking for. I didn't even know enough to ask the question. I didn't even know what the question was. Why am I here? I didn't know it until the work of Alcoholics Anonymous had been done. And I'll tell you at the end. So now you got to stay. You can't go take a nap now because I'm going to tell you why I'm here. Right? But this is what occurred. I was in junior high school. I was skipped ahead to the eighth grade math class. I was in seventh grade. I was on the dean's list, right? I was like excelling at everything, except I didn't have any friends. And now looking back, I can see why that was, right? I was the school safety. You know what that is, right? I was a little schoolyard narc that if I caught you smoking out behind the bathrooms, your name's going on a list and y'all hate me. Right? Everyone hates the North. He's a little rat, right? So I had no friends. And then I think they got tired of me because I was probably good at my job. And they invited me to go down below the school, just drink, smoke, do something, right? And I was like, all I heard was invitation. An invitation from another human being, which I already, looking back and thinking back to my first 13 years of sobriety on this planet from ages 0 to 13, I was so isolated. I had no ability to connect with another human being, none. So when they said, hey, you want to come down? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I don't remember what happened. I don't remember any feeling of like, oh, it just warms me from the toes up and I just feel good and everything's wonderful with the universe. But I remember laughing with other people. I remember laughing, like just without any thought of like, how do I fit in or what are they laughing at? Are they laughing at me? Right? And it was none of that. We were just like plastered and laughing, right? That's a kind of a measure of how isolated I already was because I took that and ran with it for the next 24 years, trying to recreate that initial feeling of being a part of. and everything went out the window. I sacrificed my entire future and your future and anybody else's future that got in the way on the altar of alcoholism so I could keep drinking no matter what. I went from being that Dean's List kid to not even getting, you can't get grades when you don't show up. In order to get an F, you have to show up and do badly, right? I got I's, I got incompletes because I was just gone. I ended up in every county camp that Orange County has to offer, right? All of them, like six different camps. I was 8 times in juvenile hall. I went to a place called CDU, which means see yourself and do something about it, right? It was a kinder, gentler version of Synanon, which some of you old timers like me might remember, right? That was brutal. It was attack rap therapy, right? And there was nothing nice about it, right? I didn't see anything and I didn't do anything about it, right? And then now I'm 18. Now I go to California Youth Authority. Now I go to Oregon State Penitentiary. Now I go to Soledad Prison. Now I go to Mule Creek Prison. Now I go to Tehachapi. And then in the mid-90s, I ended up at first I was at Sheridan FCI, Sheridan Federal Correctional Institute. I ended up robbing 8 banks, and I got 11 years, no, I got 12 years, 7 months, right? And I was like, okay, you know bank robbery, right? It's bank robbery, right? It's bank robbery. It's like, you'd see the movie Heat, right? Mine wasn't anything like that. It was pitiful, incomprehensible, low bottom drunk, apologetically robbing a teller for, you know, one time I got $237. Bank robbery, right? So ghetto. So gangster, right? I ended up, my entire complete restitution didn't even top $20,000, right? Didn't even top that, right? And I'm getting headlines, right? You get headlines, rob a bank, right? My headlines were, mild-mannered man robs bank. Right? I'd been exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous. You people had already started ruining me, right? I didn't want to hurt anybody, you know? I knew that whatever I do to another human being in this world, I am etching in my soul. I can't hurt people without desperately hurting myself, without cutting myself off from you, from God, and anything good in this planet. I remember one time I gave a pitch, and in the middle of this pitch, I was like struck with this amazing message that I got, and I was able to give it to you immediately when I got it, and I was just like so enthused. I was like, "Hey, do no harm. That's it. Just do no harm. Don't harm in any way, shape, or don't harm." And I'm like, yeah, but then we're living life and feelings occur and stuff goes on. And next thing you know, I'm flipping you off in traffic and here we go again, right? But that's the goal, right? That was the goal. So they ended up giving me that time, that 151-month sentence is what it was. And I ended up in Sheridan where I found out I didn't have to stop. They didn't have to stop. The poor federal government was losing the war on drugs and alcohol right in the place where they're supposed to have the most control, right? We were drinking Pruno, we were doing all kind of other things, and we were, they were cooking Pruno off, right, and making white lightning out of it, right? It's like, man, this is out of control here. This is crazy, right? And I dove into it to the point where I played my chain all the way out, and I didn't have any way to get what was coming in on the yard. And then I realized that there was this wall that was right next to commissary, right? And that I had access to the subceiling above it because I was the emergency repairman for HVAC and all the kitchen equipment, right? So right up over the cop, in prison, there's certain amount, there's officers that wear, they all have badges, right, in the feds. If they're in there and they're not an inmate, they have a badge, either that or they're being escorted by people. But then there's suits, right? They're in charge of stuff. And so the whole Food Service Administration was in this one section that was on that same wall. So I got up above all those guys with the suits on, with a hammer and a cold chisel, beat that wall apart to get into the commissary. Right? And they're like, Boyd, what are you doing? What are you doing up here? And I had a whole false scenario laid out up above to point to them what I was doing, right? Like, look, bro, there's a leak in this refrigeration line that goes to the main cooler for all your goods. Do you want to explain to the warden why the inmates have no food, or do you want to let me do my job and fix it? What a scumbag walking, right? But that's the convict game, right? You just play the game and run out the lies. If I got a lie that'll fly, we're flying. So I burglarized the commissary the next morning, right? We got all that stuff out of there, right? I paid all off all my debts. I got a little whatever I could get, and then I'm waiting because I know it's coming. Remember those notes I used to drop when I was a kid? There was 11 notes on Lieutenant's desk. Boy, did it, right? And I'm like, oh, man, karma, you can't escape it, man. Here it comes, right? So I did the next year in the hole, right? And you would think that this is the moment. I'm on my fifth prison term. Right, I'm a five-time loser, and I'm not even 36 years old. Right, almost. I'm pushing it, but I'm like mid-30s. I'm a five-time loser. I got another 8 years ahead of me on this prison term. No, 9 years ahead of me still, and now I'm under arrest. While under arrest, right? It's like I'm double incarcerated, right? So you think, man, okay, man, look at the man in the mirror now, right? Now we can look. Now we can begin, right, to take an assessment of your situation. I've been in AA, right? I know what time it is. But there is also this brain that wouldn't stop. And I thought, instead of doing that, I found the one place in the cell where they shook down every day, and I cooked Bruno in there for the next year. I'm cooking Pruno, and they never found it, right? I ended up getting in a fight with the cops in the hole because they tried to make me move cells, right? They make you move cells every 2 weeks because they think you're tunneling out with these plastic sporks and begin again, right? They put you in another cell and begin your tunnel again, right? It's like, man, we're not going anywhere, bro. But my batch wasn't ready. So I refused to move. Right. And they like that when that happens. They're like, oh, they start smiling, which I didn't think was so good. And they come in like this. They go, team up, right? Really deep, like loud, like screaming, team up. The door busts open. And five of the biggest dudes that are in the prison, right? Three of the biggest, like swollen with steroid muscle, like up to here, right? One after another, pushing each other. You know, fully suited, like they look like Ninja Turtles, all carapaced armor and shit. You couldn't see any skin on them at all, right? There's like aliens coming in after you, right? And they couldn't find me in the 6x8 cell. I was underneath the bunk bed where they have a built-in steel cage for shelving almost all the way to the floor. And on the very end of the bunk bed, there's like a little hole about that big that if you're really wiry and like what's the word? Contortionist. If you're a contortionist, you can get in there, right? And there I was in the back, all braced up, plastic over my eyes, wet towel over my mouth. I'm ready for the tear gas. You ain't getting me out of here, right? And I fought them off for 15 hours. Well, 2 minutes. Felt like 15 hours, right? These dudes are serious, right? They're trying to get me out of there, right? And the place was going off. They were screaming. Oh, the rest of the hole was like, well, I was screaming like a little girl the entire time, right? It wasn't like Lockdown San Quentin, like really tough dudes or anything. It was just like, one more time. There's a pitiful low bottom drunk, right? Men misbehaving, right? That was what I was doing again. And they ended up, disappearing the camera, right? Once the camera disappears, you know it's going to go all bad. It's going sideways quickly now. So I quickly surrendered, right? Get me out of here. And they shipped me to USP Lompoc Federal Penitentiary. I'm like, well, okay. It's a little closer to home, right? I'm not in Oregon anymore. And I got to tell you, I was in Soledad, right? I've been through Chino 4 or 5 times by this mm-hmm. time. But those gates of Soledad, I mean of Lompoc, those gates and the big stairs and the way those buildings look coming out of the, it looked like old bones coming out of the earth. It was an impressive penitentiary. It really was. I was looking at, you know, on the bus driving up, and I'm like, oh, man. And I was in the hole. I was under arrest. While under arrest, I hadn't even been there 90 days. 3 months. Excuse me. 30 days. I was there 30 days, and I was in the hole again. And this time when I got out, I was with this dude that had more prison game than anybody I ever met. Right, that we were into something that would take us out of here every day for the next 3 months. You know, I would sit up there all pie-eyed with them on whatever and talking about being in AA, and one day the desire to be clean and sober is going to come upon me. I know it will, bro, right? And I'm like, you got any more, right? It's like, man, it was so pitiful. But it did. It did, right? Out of an empty sky comes lightning. And that's what happened to me. There was a man named 6'8 that came and put something in my hand and said, when can you pay me? And I told him 2 weeks, without any hesitation, without any thought for my personal well-being on this prison yard. Because 6'8 was a description of this man's size, and it was an understatement. It was the biggest human being I've ever seen. Man, Dave remembers him. That was a big boy, right? Another race, another gang, another part of the country, and I just, like, not even caring about me, told him, yeah, I'll pay you in 2 weeks. I did. I paid that dude in 2 weeks, right? But see, the thing is, in order to worry about something like that, I would have had to care about me. I didn't care about me at all by this point. All I cared about is, how do I shut this off? How do I put something in my body so that when I lay my head down at night, I don't think about the trajectory that I have taken in my life? That I don't think about the arc that isn't like this, that's like this, and that feels like I'm in the abyss of self, and I don't even know what that is. I don't have the words to describe that, what was going on in the inside of me. I woke up the next morning, and I could not stand myself. You know, Chuck C, my homeboy from Laguna, who I got to meet. I didn't get sober and meet him, but I was dry. I was suffering from sobriety, and I met him in 84, right before he died, right? My dad knew him. But he said, when I got to AA, I wouldn't have touched me with a 10-foot pole. That's how I felt. That's who I was walking in here. You know, and I gave him my best shot about being like, you know, like, I'm all authentic, and I'm like real, and I don't know if Dave remembers, but I told some story about the etymology of the word sincere, right? Sincere, with, you know, wax free, that they used to use in the marketplace. Blah 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 blah, right? I just wanted to stop this. I wanted to stop me, and I wanted you to believe something about me that wasn't what was really going on in here. But this is what I found. I found a group of men that were talking about becoming men of dignity and honor. We're on a level 4 yard, right? And there's a group of dudes that are like, I don't care. You know, some of them weren't getting out for like decades, right? My first sponsor in there, a man named Wayne D, he, in 1988, he was arrested. He got out in 2018. So there were some dudes that were doing serious, serious time. Like, I didn't even want to talk about my little 11 years, right? I didn't even want to talk about it, right? And for the next 7 years, I was right with them. I was in it to win it. I was a pom-pom waving, cheerleading member of Alcoholics Anonymous on that prison yard. You know, the fellas would see me coming. They'd be like, oh, man, stay away. Right. We don't want to hear it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you don't want to hear it now. But right. And it was, I'm proselytizing and everything, right? But I stayed sober. I stayed sober. And I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in there. My sponsor, Wayne, walked me through the first six steps. And then several other guys, including Dave, walked me through the rest. And I want to tell you about the fourth step and the fifth step, because that was the one. That was the one. I am not telling you these things. I'm not telling. I've got 24 years in of drinking and using and doing despicable things to myself and others, right? Like, we share in a general way, right? Or I'd tell you, right? But it's serious, like hardcore 24 years of what we do to shame ourselves deeply on the inside. Like, I was a trauma factory that I kept doing it to myself over and over and over. I kept taking actions that would create shame and trauma and despair within me. It was like a vicious cycle. It would just keep going, and I would need to drink more and more and more. My story wasn't like, if you had a life like mine, you'd drink too. My story was, if you did what I've done, you would drink like I do too. There's no other solution for me. I didn't know any other way. But I realized something listening to you people in that prison, right? Listening to all these men. I realized that those things that I was going to take to the grave with me, that I was never going to tell another human being. I couldn't. I can't tell people this. Those things were taking me to the grave with them. That's what really was happening. Those secrets were killing me. So I gave it all up to Wayne. I gave him everything in the gym of USP Lompoc Penitentiary. I, you know, 500 crazy semi-supervised convicts running around, and we're over in the corner crying, right? Because I'm giving it all up, everything, right? And then Wayne starts talking, and I'm listening to Wayne, and I realize, oh, my God, I am not the sickest man on the face of the earth. He is. And I've been free ever since, right? Because Wayne's still alive. He's still got the crown, right? heavy, what's that say? Heavy's the head that wears the crown. It's not me. I'm not wearing it anymore. But I got to tell you, since then, every sponsee that I've worked with, I've done the exact same thing. I have freed them just the same as Wayne freed me. And I paroled in January 3rd, 2005. We had some of the best meetings I've ever, you know, you look back in your life, and so for those 7 years, I was sober on the inside. You look back on your life, and you're like, that period of time was the bomb. It's like golden. It's like nostalgia plus, right? It's nostalgia, like the best times of my life, when I could look back and see the finger of God stirring my life. Was those 7 years in a level four penitentiary. I would walk the track with my friends or my sponsees or my sponsor crying tears of joy for the life that's been afforded me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Just the same way that I heard Cliff. That's where I heard Cliff. He came into that penitentiary and talked to us. There's like 20 sullen convicts with our arms crossed judging him, right? What's this fool going to tell us, right? And he's up there, he knows the power of his story, right? He's got to know it, right? Because he gave it like nobody's business. And he's crying tears of gratitude up there at the podium. And I'm like sitting right where David's front row going, my God, I have no idea this was out there. Who knew, man? They didn't teach AA in kindergarten. Maybe you should. Got to learn to identify the little groms like me, though, that are going to be trouble later on. So I paroled in 2005, January 3rd, and I was a member of H&I right off the bat. I had three H&I phone numbers, so Orange County, North County, H&I was my place in Garden Grove. And within 3 years... I did what I could for those 3 years. 3 years later, when I got off federal probation, I was in the penitentiaries. Like, almost immediately, I got cleared to go in the penitentiaries. And that I got cleared to go in Chino East Yard, first off. I've been in Chino East Yard several times, right? The last time was in 89. I was in there for a violation. It used to be a violator's yard. So I'm walking into this penitentiary just as you see me right now, right? I'm walking in. I'm like floating in, right? And I'm looking around. I'm remembering this place, right? I'm remembering how I felt in here before. The officers are calling me, sir. Man, that's good, right? That's good. And then there's this one officer in the back, this sergeant, and he's got a look on his face, and he's staring at me like he's like, and I'm like, oh, no, he knows. He knows. What does he know? He walks over to me, and he says, sir. There we go. He says, sir, I just want you to know that these men in here wouldn't listen to anything a man like you has to say. They're just here for the coffee, right? And I was like, well, I'm here for me, sir. I'm here for me. And I went in there and smoked and joked with those guys back in the back, told those guys what that sergeant had told me, and we all laughed, right? But they looked at me the same way, right? They see what you see right now, right? I hadn't said anything yet. They couldn't detect my prison accent, right? So, but once I start talking, they're like, oh, my God. And this is what I hope and I pray. This is what I pray every time I go into one of those places. I pray that they see the same thing that I see. When I go in there, I see me on that other side of that decision I make to surrender my will and my life to the care of God as I understand him and do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to clean out the wreckage of me so that I can be there for you. I hope those guys see them what they could be in me. You know, in all my imperfect glory, the man I am today is a marked improvement on the man that walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, your bank money is safe now, right? You don't have to go make withdrawals or anything, right? I'm not after it. It's not mine. I was in, I got a job for a New Vision Federal Credit Union, right, through this other contractor, but I'm an electrician, right? So I got this job with them, and they take me to this big building, right, and it's a friggin' bank, right? But it's a credit union, right? So it's a credit union. I've been out of prison like 2-3 years. I'm still on probation, though. They take me down to security, and they put my thumb in the security system, and so I'm cleared to open any door in the place. Well, I mean, probably not the vault, but all the doors have little thumbprint security locks on them, like everywhere in this whole place. So they take me down there. I put my thumb cleared. I go about my work. At the end of the day, I'm leaving there, and I thought about what they'd done. I thought about where I was and the level of trust that people have in me, because that's who I am now. I'm a trustworthy man. I'm an honorable man. I became what they were talking about in the rooms in that prison. Becoming men of dignity and honor. That's who I've become. But then I was terribly, terribly upset and like mad. Oh, how could that place do that? How could they clear me? That's a security breach. That's a problem that they got going on right now, man. Somebody needs to address this, right? And then I'm like, wait, I'm not telling on myself, man. I'm not going to tell them. So, I have had so many experiences like that since I've been out. I was at a convention where I was the H&I. I'm like a built-in H&I speaker, right? I got H&I. I was given H&I in prison, and I'm given H&I now that I'm a free man. And it's like, so I was an H&I speaker, and I was introduced to the deputy director of the Orange County jail system, right? He's in full regalia, like full uniform and stuff. And then we get introduced, thank you very much, sir, right? It's like, this is weird, right? And then the guy that introduced me, reintroduced me, he told the officer, no, sir, you don't understand. This is the guy. This is the guy that donated the sewing machine to your program at the farm, right? And this officer, this deputy director, starts hopping from foot to foot with tears rolling down his eyes going, sir, sir, you don't know what you've done. And he proceeded to run down what had happened from that one sewing machine that I donated. the women in there had started this program where they sold specialty clothing for like for children, for cancer patients, and it was just local, right? Or anybody, any child in need, they were sewing specialty clothing, and it blew up to they were doing it for children's hospitals all across the country, right? And they were like, and there was only one sewing machine donated. It was a badass sewing machine. Like, it was a really, really, like, industrial level, really good sewing machine, right? And I don't take any credit from that other than, you know what I am? I'm in the game. I'm in the game of life. Now, it's not a game, right? I don't mean to minimize it or anything, but it's like I am fully present and accounted for and pertinent in my own life and every now and then in yours. And that's where God lives. My God lives in the connections that I have with my fellow human beings. When for one reason or another, all our egos are put aside and we reach out and we connect, whether it's a hug, whether it's a look across the room of like, I know, or whether it's in pain. Usually for me, I feel the deepest connection with people in pain. You know what I mean? Because I created pain like a maestro, like one of the old artists of the old world. Like I was a creator of pain beyond, usually for myself. But if you happen to be around, you're welcome to some too. So it's just how I was. And I ended up, I started my own company, Laguna Beach Electric. Right, my wife is in the process right now of helping me blow it up. We're gonna supersize this thing, right? And I'm so excited, right? I'm so excited. I've had two great experiences since I've been out. I've learned how to mountain bike ride, and even more painful, I broke my back, I broke my ribs, I broke everything except my head, right? Even more painful. I would take all that over again rather than the pain I created by learning how to date in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Talk about being fundamentally like, inept doesn't even begin to come. I was absolutely unable. I didn't know what I was doing. For almost all my life, I've been locked away from half of humanity. Didn't know how to talk to women at all. Didn't know what I was looking for. And I got challenged at another convention. I got challenged by this woman. She really likes me. And she was like, now, who are you dating, right? She's all in my business, right? And I started playing her this little sad song and dance I got, right? Because I was on dating I'm like 15 years, 16 years sober, and I'm on dating restrictions from my sponsor because I had messed it up so bad again, right? He's like, we're going to take a little time out. And I'm like, but my whole life is a timeout. And she cut me short. She said, no, I don't want to hear it. That's because you've been dating the women that would have you rather than the one that you want. Now, who is it? And I didn't know from that moment to the very next moment that Sarah's name was going to fall out of my mouth. I did not know. One reason or another, I just didn't even consider that I could rise up to this in my life, that I was the man that was capable of being the man for her. I did not know that, didn't believe that at that time. But over the next 3-4 months, that woman pushed me and pushed me and pushed me until I finally called her up and asked her on a date. And that was December 2015. Right, and almost 3 years ago, she said I do, and we were married, and she took me to Ireland, right? Her whole family is from Ireland, right? Like all of them, her mom and dad are here, right, and her sister, right? But they all came from Ireland, and introduced me to all the family, the complete family over there, and they loved me, right? They were so happy with me. You guys did good work with me, right? I put it when I want to, right? I can be an a-hole if I want to too, right? But when I want to, I can be very nice and personable, and I really wanted to for her family. I didn't think it necessary to tell them my whole story, right? But I did go down to the local AA meeting and give them my American bank robbery story, right? They loved it, man. They were like, oh, he's great. Oh, you're a crazy man, you are, right? So much fun, right? So we wandered all over Ireland for 10 days, right? 10 days all over Ireland. We went to the Aran Islands. I felt like standing on the edge of the world. Like I was on the very edge of the world, the very edge of history. It's like the oldest ruins in all of Europe. Right, and we're there. We're there, Dun Angus. We're there, Dun Angus, looking at this. Just, and I'm with like a druidic priestess, beauty beyond. Right, like I belong here by God. Right, I'm embracing my Irish roots too. Right, I got a little bit Irish. Right, and then she took me to Rome. All my life, I've wanted to go to Rome. I've dreamed about Rome. I've read every book I could get my hands on about ancient Rome. I could tell you more about ancient Rome and what went down than I can American history. I'm like a Romophile or whatever, right? We went to the Vatican. I think that was the first day or the second day. We went to the Vatican, right? And I'm an artist too, right? I'm from Laguna Beach, right? My mom's an artist. I got it naturally. We went through the Vatican Museum, like a private tour of the Vatican Museum, just like us and like a couple people, right? It was, and the tour director was, he was a trained actor, right? He was a trained actor, and he was going to school for this very thing, ancient art history of the Vatican, right? So he had knowledge and presentation, and I had the semi-informed questions for him. So we like bonded seriously, man, and I'm in the midst of some of the greatest art the world has ever seen in there, like ever. It's like beyond, you can't even wrap my mind around it. It was so amazing. And the last stop, of course, is the Sistine Chapel. So I'm in here, and now there's a lot of people, right? It's like women and children, right? They're kids and stuff, right? It's not a place to break down sobbing. Right. Oh, by the way, happy birthday. Where is she? Happy. That was phenomenal. Right. I heard you. Like when I got sober, the levee broke too. Right. And I was in level 4 penitentiary, and I'm crying. Like that's not good. Right. It's not really good. But here I am again, crying my eyes out because I just couldn't take it. I couldn't take the beauty that I felt was all around me and that humanity had done. Alcoholics Anonymous has allowed me to fall in love with humanity where I didn't even know how to go up, walk up, and shake your hand. I've had some really horrible things happen in sobriety. I just lost a really good friend that I worked with for 10 years as a member of H&I until he got out, and then I hired him, and he had 10 years sober and he couldn't stay off the meth. And he took himself out horribly. Like he can hardly escape the trauma of what he did. I will take that and continuing to do it again. I just hired a man that almost looks just like him with the same story. I just hired him. I have to. You guys did it for me. I have to pass it on. The thing that makes it okay for me to feel that kind of stuff and to not have to go run down a road and hide from it, the thing that gets me and makes it okay is this. I finally realized, through being in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough and having enough moments of aha, get it. Having enough of those moments to realize why I'm here. And for what I believe, why we're all here. It's not to get mines. It's not to break mines off or where's mine and I want to come up and how much am I going to make, bro? All right? It's none of that. We're here for each other. I'm here for you. That is my best iteration in this world. If I can be that man occasionally, it doesn't happen very often. I'm human. I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. Alcoholics Anonymous is never going to fully change that. but it'll water on stone. You know, it'll water on stone that stuff and wear it away so that more and more I can have my hand there for the next guy that still suffers. And if we do that, we are doing that all the way back to Bill and Bob. We're in a chain that's beyond, it's like the greatest spiritual experience I could ever imagine, and I'm right in the middle of it with all of you. I'm no longer alone. And I could talk forever, but I'm going to shut up 2 minutes early, man. I love you dearly. Thank you so much.
Wow, that was fantastic, David. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate it. And from the bottom of my heart, I can tell you this honestly. The whole Newport Beach thing wasn't my fault. It was on my cheat sheet. So I'm going to blame Tom. I'm going to blame Tom, right? Okay. So, David, from Dana Point, thank you very much. One more time for David. That was super great. Please come back and share your story with us again next year. Yeah? We'll make it a date. Okay, good. And thank you for the ladies auxiliary and the boys in the house for a great dinner tonight. Woohoo! If everybody would like to join me in ending the meeting in the usual manner, let's circle up.